If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon with a fully recovered JB. How are you doing, Jay?
I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. I'm absolutely knackered today, though. I've done 2 days of stripping. Hardcore stripping.
Does that pay well?
No. It's effectively free. I've never stripped so hard in all my life. So started yesterday morning, and as of today, I've managed to strip half a boat of paint.
Hey, there we go.
It's hard.
He has also stripped for the podcast. It's just, unfortunately, me and Phil are the only people that can see that right now.
Exactly.
We can see some bare feet, definitely.
And Phil has done the opposite of stripping. How are you doing, Phil?
The opposite of I'm okay, Tim.
He's put on a
new strip.
Actually, you've got a new strip on. And I've never seen a football shirt, actually, that looks decent on a fully grown adult male.
Oh, I don't know.
That isn't a professional footballer.
I've got to say, Lukaku looks good in all his shirts.
He's a professional footballer.
Yeah, but he's the only professional footballer that looks good in all his shirts.
He fills them out very nicely in all the right places.
But Phil has got a new Manchester United change shirt on.
Yeah.
It looks a bit more like a t-shirt, which I quite like.
It is. Oh, it's quite me. It's quite retro, quite hipster. And then last weekend, when it was the opening weekend of the season, the football season, United played Leeds. Big rivalry. And there was a video going round of a load of the football hooligans clashing on the streets of Manchester, filmed from inside a cafe. And there was a bloke wearing this exact blue, white and red United retro shirt, sipping his flat white while this chaos happened outside. And I thought, I want to be that bloke. I don't want to be those idiots outside.
You don't want to be the Costa lady running to the door trying to lock it.
No. I want to be nice and relaxed.
There's something weird about that United Leeds game. Because we've been locked up and everything's been sanitised and we're all told how to behave. And then the Leeds fans come down and that's how real people behave. Well, not real people, that's how people behave.
Yeah.
And like, everyone's just so shocked that they were singing nasty songs and rioting and fighting. Like, yeah. Oh my God.
I don't know about the game. I want to be told where these rucks are happening in Manchester for United home games, just so I can go to a coffee shop and get a window seat. Here they come, lads!
What? Christ!
There's a great... So in Sale, I occasionally stroll into the centre of Sale for a beer or a glass of wine, and there's a lovely wine bar called Cork of the North, and it's
great name.
Right opposite... Great name. Great pun. It's right opposite the Wetherspoons in Sale. So I can be sat there on the front having a nice... ice cold Albarino, then they've got window seats looking out. I can have a nice Albarino or Pui Fumi or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's kicking off outside Wetherspoons across the road. Like, and I'm like a nice safe distance from it all happening.
It's a sort of dystopian thing, isn't it? Of like sipping your latte behind your big glass wall whilst hooligans are busy belting each other with bins.
Exactly.
It's very bizarre.
So not to cast aspersions on all football fans, because last week,
of course not.
After I'd seen the Red Paths and Miles Reid, I was coming back on the tram from Altrincham, and there was a load of United fans, and obviously there was me, the two kids, and Claire, and they could not have been nicer or more courteous to us.
They
were absolutely brilliant. So there's no...
What cracks me up, and I kind of forgot about how savage football is, but like, did you hear the the Rashford and Sancho songs. And it's hard not to laugh, isn't it? Because like, you're just not meant to say these things. You're just not meant to say it. And I don't agree with it, but it is funny.
It is quite
very,
funny to
very funny. To and it was just like, oh my God, what are they saying? You can't say that. Incorrect, we can actually.
There's a little Ricky Gervais thing, which I think he was talking to Sam Harris about it, but basically making the point that people's write to him saying, oh, you can't joke about that. Point out one thing, like something that's really tragic, like someone dying of cancer. And he's like, well, why have you pointed out that one thing, but then none of the other things, like none of the other tragic things? But because people have one thing that to them is the most personal thing in the world, but ignore everything else that is incredibly personal to everyone else.
There would have been people in the BBC offices down in Salford who would have been absolutely gobsmacked that someone dare sing a song like that. And that's just why I found it so funny. it is funny.
Nothing should be off limit for
something, something should be.
Maybe.
Yes. Yeah, well, in terms of the rugby, we do have a game to talk about. We have a bit of kind of political wrangling and more off the field stuff to talk about in rugby, but we also have received I was going to say a letter. It's more than that. We've received a dossier.
Good dossier or a bad dossier?
I think it's a great dossier.
Russian.
So you listen to the podcast, and we thank you very much for that. And we are here 52 weeks of the year. And in amongst our podcast on a regular basis, we will try and give our thoughts and our predictions on the outcome of games through the season. We don't keep tabs on that. We should. I mean, maybe it's a self-defense mechanism that if we kept tabs on it, we'd sort of go, right, we need to pack this podcast up because we know nothing. Anyway, I've received a dossier called the Tetlock Cup, and it says, created and produced by Hannah Snell. Mm. The overview says, after almost 12 months of indulgent gossip, quality content, basement prittle-prattle and reassuringly vague predictions on the outcome of rugby games, we finally bring you the results of the much-anticipated and never-to-be-repeated Tetlock Cup. With a cult-like following trumped only by sex from CrossFit and the Smiths, the Egg Chasers do attract some oddballs. One loyal Egg Chasers listener, Hannah Snell, dreamed up the Tetlock Cup to try and capture weekly predictions and evaluate just how much the boys know their onions. See, in our review from The Telegraph in the top 30 podcasts in the world, we were described as
convivial.
Pleasingly
convivial, and the phrase know your onions was used.
Mm. Mm.
Brackets. JB, if you don't know who Hannah Snell is, polish up on your history of the Royal Marines.
Right. Well, we do know who Hannah Snell is. Well, thank you very much.
So briefly, Phil, who's Hannah Snell?
So in the 18th century, she was a British woman who disguised herself as a man to become a soldier.
Wow.
So I was going to say, she's like a modern-day Brienne of Tarth, but actually she's not, because Brienne was not... was she disguised?
She never was initially.
Was she?
Yes, she was disguised initially. Yes.
And the young Stark girl disguised herself at some point, didn't she?
As a young boy, yeah.
Yes.
Correct.
Fancy imitating reality.
Mm.
Game of Thrones references, if you weren't aware. Right, what Hannah Snell did not anticipate was what Sisyphean task it would be to try and pin each of you down to a winner of each game. At times, it was like trying to sculpt air.
Wow.
Hannah would personally like to thank Phil for his predictably clear predictions. No surprises there. In order to accurately evaluate how good or bad your predictions were, Hannah also ran a bot that picked at random the winner of each game to see how you did against chance.
Jesus.
This bot was menacingly named the Stephen Jones bot. As it turned out, the SJ bot's predictions were as good as his best ever fly half selections.
Mm.
As well as the Stephen Jones bot, we also wanted to see how successful a bot would be if it simply picked the home team as victors in every game.
Mm,
Hannah felt this bot needed a name with a corresponding lack of self-awareness and one-eyed proclivity, so it was called the Maserati bot.
Love it.
Nice.
Conclusions. Depending on which metric you focus on, you could probably make a case for all but Tim and the Stephen Jones bot as the winner of the Tetlock Cup.
I would not have thought that.
Yeah, me neither.
Without being able to accurately make apples-for-apples comparisons across the five participants, there's graphs on the next page. Wow. Hannah has decided to make a judgment call on the winners. Tetlock Cup winners, JB and Phil. For different reasons.
I'm astonished by this. There's got to be a sting in the tail.
Footnotes and caveats. JB had the highest prediction percentage, overall number of games predicted, divided by number of correctly predicted games.
What?
But, he also predicted 9 fewer games than Phil, which gives him a clear statistical advantage. Less predictions means a higher chance avoiding reversion to the mean. For that reason, it's unfair to award the Tetlock Cup to JB. Wonkish analysis and commentary. The Maserati bot predicted the most amount of games correctly, but also attempted to predict the outcome of every single game, as did the Stephen Jones bot. JB attempted to predict the least amount of anyone, 99, but actually had the highest prediction percentage of 66%. The Stephen Jones bot correctly predicted the fewest games, 60, and had the lowest percentage, 49%, but he did attempt the prediction of all games. Right, get that. In the COVID season, when crowds played virtually no part, there was obviously less home field advantage, but the home team still won 58% of games. That's quite interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
This means in a normal season, your best strategy would be to always pick the home team, but make an exception when the top two teams play bottom two away from home, for example. This is a great little accumulator
plan. Should we read anymore?
We should keep this to ourselves. This is valuable.
Yeah.
So basically, just by picking...
Don't let the people know.
Yeah. So, overall, games correctly predicted. Phil actually had the most games. I had the fewest out of the three of us. It's quite tight. You can look at the graphs for yourself, but I just thought the general point it was quite interesting if you were coming up with a...
So the reason I'm so astonished by this is because I'm always looking for upsets. I'm always looking for the upset. I think, because you've got to think about these things. Where I see the upset. There's no way that's right.
I think the thing is Sale had a good season, which meant that...
Yeah, that is true. I also pick a lot of Worcester.
I also pick Worcester. Certainly early on in the year, I had a lot of hope and expectation for Worcester last year.
I picked a lot.
Got let down.
I sort of know who I pick because of the teams I like.
But I also think, I'm looking at this, 25 on 25 occasions, JB did not pick a winner.
Because I'll say I don't know.
Which I suggest that you just swerve the tough-to-call matches.
Well, yeah, I say I don't know.
You pick the obvious ones.
Or JB does, the most famous example of this was England-Australia in the quarterfinal of the 2019 World Cup, where about 2 or 3 minutes apart, you predicted a big England win and Australia by 10.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty foolproof.
It could, yeah, exactly.
as was said in this dossier, like trying to sculpt air. Yeah. So, JB, you had 66% prediction success, Phil 63%, and I had 61%.
So, pretty tight.
Well done, Jay.
Astonishing. Yeah. Astonishing.
But
I'm actually not happy with it.
I would not question Hannah Snell's accuracy or methods.
There's also an Excel spreadsheet which has got loads of valuable information which you can dig into, Phil. That's your domain.
Wonderful.
So, top hedge fund managers only pick like 52% right. I wonder if next season then we should put... I've always thought, I wonder if it'd be a good idea to have a betting account which you put your bets on, but within certain rules, like maximum, minimum... And then, I don't know, you've got to bet, they've got to be reasonable bets. Like, you can't just say, first try scorer this, or,
win, like, win, loss, draw.
So, well, if just playing that through, so you got 68% right.
66%.
Oh, sorry, 66.
Two-thirds, yeah.
66% correct. If you just put a fixed figure on every single game throughout the season, would you make money or not? Because 66%... But there will be lots of those where,
sure,
like, Exeter play in Worcester would be, you'd get 1.01.
Pennies on the pound.
Yeah. You'd get 1p for predicting that correctly. Whereas some of the other games, I had that accumulator that got me 700 quid last year, including Scotland winning away in France. As one of the multipliers.
So is it, yeah. So do you put it all on as an accumulator, or do you do it as...
No, do it as individual, because the problem with the accumulators is one bad result ruins five good results.
You could get 84% correct or whatever it is, or whatever the percentage would be.
Yeah. But no, you'd have to do it as individual bets. But I think because of the weighting, I think you'd probably still lose money.
Brilliant.
even if you predicted,
well, house always wins,
correct?
Like on the roulette wheel, house always wins because of the zero draws as well.
Yeah.
Oh well. Maybe I'll have to go back to work and earn money the real way.
If there's one thing we probably would have had 100% accuracy on, it would be the prediction that rugby would find new ways to completely make a farce of itself.
Oh yeah, I'd say so.
That is a certainty.
And the Rugby Championship have managed it.
It's not really their fault, is it?
Well, I don't know.
Go on then. You tell
me. So on this one, this is the Rugby Championship this year. After last year, the Springboks withdrew because they weren't ready, and so this year, New Zealand was supposed to, they've played Australia twice. They were supposed to travel to Perth this weekend to play Bledisloe 3. And seemingly at very short notice, without any prior notice to Rugby Australia, according to Rugby Australia's CEO, they withdrew from the game. They just said, we're not travelling.
New Zealand said that?
New Zealand said they're not travelling to
Christ.
Perth.
Christ.
Yeah.
I don't know what the financial implications are of that. Obviously, there's no game, there's no TV money, there's going to be a crowd that disappears, but I don't know what the lockdown scenario is.
They'll have had to pay all their staff at the stadium, the stewards, all the rest of it, the policing costs, even though they would have...
Do stewards still get paid? I thought you had to actually be there. It's like shift work, like you have to be there. I wouldn't be surprised if they're out of pocket.
Well, I don't know, potentially, but I think if... Think about self-employed freelance stuff or occasions like that. Is if you book yourself in for that, you can't do anything else.
You're the example of the most worthy of employees, but it's a serious point. If you were working that game, you wouldn't have got paid. Simple as that, because you are
making the point that I would have invoiced for it, because if I say to whoever it is, Virgin Radio, whoever I was working for as a client, if I said yes to that and we agreed and said yes, book me in for that, I will do that on those terms, then I have to say no to anyone else who says, are you available on this day? So that day is like, self-employed people don't have a day off.
Yeah, of course you don't.
You don't have holiday, you don't have a day off. You have every day as a work day, other than days where you choose not to.
So, I mean, that aside...
Yeah, so anyway, like, there'll be a big financial cost.
Well, I can't imagine the insurer's going to pay out for this. Who's going to bill for it all?
So Andy Marinos, the CEO of Rugby Australia, has threatened, in his angry response to this, he's threatened that if they don't play this game at a later date, I think not next weekend, the weekend after has been mooted, he will be hitting New Zealand with a bill. With a multi-million dollar, Australian dollar bill for all of the associated costs that we're referring to now.
Dave Rennie was absolutely furious. Did not hold his punches at all. Did you see what Dave Rennie said, Phil?
I did, yeah.
He pointed out, again, fill in the gaps, Phil, where needed, but Dave Rennie essentially said, last year when New Zealand had issues, we travelled and we quarantined for 2 weeks in order to fulfil the fixtures. And then at very late notice, without telling us, the players found out on social media, you've just bailed.
Yeah, it's pathetic. There's no other word for it. It's pathetic. It's derisible. I hate it. I hate it. They've got weak leadership. And they should have done what's right. I mean, look, rugby-wise, I'm not sure if it makes a huge amount of difference. Australia were going to get an absolute hiding, no doubt. But at least they wanted to play. And the higher-ups of New Zealand rugby should hang their heads in shame. It's awful.
And from a rugby perspective, you're exactly right. But it's more of a financial implication at this moment in time.
Well, so many aspects to it, isn't there? When COVID all first kicked off, everybody said, yeah, of course you should stop the football games. Of course you should stop the rugby games. We don't know what the implication of this awful disease is. We have no idea. And then as it drags on, you realise that, as you pointed out before, Phil, it's not about life, it's about quality of life. And sporting events are bloody important. They're important to your culture. They're important to people's well-being. You know, it's more than just the financial hit, which is something. But it just tells the whole population what's what. It's absolutely awful.
The context is a country shut down both North and South Island for one case on the North Island. So you understand it. But it's just that I think Australia Rugby Australia can rightly say, we really did you a solid last year at a huge personal cost and sacrifice, and you've just walked away.
Now, right. I don't know how much of this is down to New Zealand rugby, who have not covered themselves in glory at all recently, and how much is down to the New Zealand government, who are obviously, I mean,
nuts.
Psychotic.
Basically, well, both Australia, just, well, if we're talking about governance, Australia and New Zealand are both insane.
They both seem pretty crazy, but they've created a position where no risk is acceptable to them, but only on this one plane. Like, and when you look at the decisions they're making on this compared to some of the other decisions, taking the stance that not a single death from COVID is acceptable is great, and it sounds good, but it's just political posturing. And when you actually have to play through the implications of that, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you shut down an entire economy because of risk.
And in our domain, you shut down an entire sport, which, as you've said, JB, the value of which is huge and tangible, and the businesses directly and indirectly related to rugby are huge. The personal welfare, mental health, physical health, all of those things.
The way that I look
massive.
At, look,
that's just rugby.
Yeah, the way that I look at sport in general within a culture is it's like salt in your diet. You don't know you don't need it until you start dying because you don't have any salt.
Yeah.
It does seem on the face of it a very trivial thing that you know, you get to watch your sports team, but we found out in lockdown that it does actually affect quality of life. They should be out there playing. That sports should have an exception. But I think, you know, I think it's probably about the politics of what this says as much as anything.
Well, this game is missing.
Yeah, this is only part of the developments, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yeah. And this game not taking place actually got me doing something which I lasted in lockdown, which was going back to old game footage.
Mm.
Not because of this game, but because of it's been discussed, well, if Australia and New Zealand are not going to host games, where can you host them? So it's been discussed that it could go to the Middle East, or it could go to Twickenham, or the Northern Hemisphere, France, Wales, England, or it could go to South Africa, of said they can host it, which obviously they've hosted a Lions tour, albeit in very restricted circumstances. And that got me looking back to the last time there was a Southern Hemisphere game in the Northern Hemisphere at Twickenham, when Crusaders played the Sharks.
Yes, and that was one of the best games of all time, I would say.
It was an amazing... So I rewatched, not the full game, just the highlights of it. It was an amazing game.
Ask Tim, can you name the backline for the Crusaders that day?
Presumably it was...
It's a hell of a backline.
It's awesome.
It's absolutely awesome.
Mwanga.
Which one? Is it correct?
So it was 2011.
Oh, yeah. 11. Oh,
2011.
Okay. All right, okay. Dan Carter.
Correct.
Correct.
The wingers are hard. The wingers are...
I would get the wingers... So the nine is the hardest position, I think. I think the wingers are okay.
Can I guess? Is it Willie Hines, the nine?
No, I don't think. I'm just getting the team up. I don't think it is.
I'm sure he has some sort of record for the amount of Crusaders appearances.
I've not got the bench here. No, it's definitely not.
I've got the team. I'm completely blanking.
I think the back three were Maitland.
Yes.
Guildford.
Wow.
I think...
That Guildford, he turned up naked at a wedding reception.
Yes. That's a boy.
I mean, Guildford was awesome in this game.
He was.
Maitland scored two tries. He was awesome.
Was Izzy Dagg?
Izzy Dagg was at 15.
Oh, yeah. So the
centres. One centre is easy.
Crotty?
No.
Oh, God. I got this guy in my head.
One centre is easy. One centre is hard.
So... No. Sonny Bill.
Sonny Bill. Sonny Bill was awesome. Yeah.
So the 13.
13, yeah.
I've got this guy as well. Is he a smaller chap? And is he like...
No. He is not a smaller chap.
Ndolo?
No.
Not Hadley Parks.
No. I'm sure Hadley Parks played for the Blues, I want to say.
Blues, actually.
So it is a chap who did come north...
Chap that came north, eh? Not sure about that one. Oh, Not a...
Oh, Luke McAllister. No.
No. Nope.
He wasn't. Not a Sam Tutupo, someone like that.
Nope. He's only 33, but he retired a few years ago because of health issues.
Crikey, I have no idea.
Big boy. As big as Sonny Bill.
In my head, I'm imagining a lad that looks like Kurandrani. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, you're not a million... Well, he's a big, strong boy. He's not Kurandrani. I don't think he's...
what's his name? Gone.
Fijian. So Robbie Froon.
Oh, I did know that. Damn it. And where did he go? He went to Glasgow in the end.
Edinburgh and Bath. He was briefly.
He was awesome. But Robbie Froon was like the same size pretty much as Sonny Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have these two are just physical gods, and Froon could play. He could play.
They could both play.
What was his problem? A hole in the horse, I think, was it?
Yeah, it was a heart issue. Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe I didn't get that. How annoying. and the scrum off to finish it off. I'm going to say, Cowan?
No. It's Ellis.
Oh, of course. Andy Ellis, is that?
Yeah, I think it is. And then in the forwards, so you had Wyatt Crockett, Owen Franks, Corey Flynn, Ben Franks came off the bench. Then you had... Brad Thorne and Sam Whitelock.
Wow.
With Chris Jack on the bench.
Wow.
Best of luck, boys.
George Whitelock, Matt Togg, and Kieran Reid.
Wow.
But, so the Sharks had World Cup winners in their team as well.
The Sharks that day was Ryan Kinkowski.
Kinkowski at 8, Willem Alberts, Alistair Hargreaves. He's got Mostert on here, which I'm not sure.
He'd be 4.
It was 10 years ago. He had the Duplessis brothers.
Yep.
Bismarck and Yanni. Like 30 now, so that could be Franco Mostert. But Mostert's quite a common name, to be fair.
I think Mostert's about 26. No, 28. So it'd be 18.
Let's have a quick look. Did he play for the Sharks? He's 30.
Is he? Okay.
Did he play for the Sharks? No, he didn't.
No.
So it's a different Mostert. Yeah. He played for the Blue Bulls and the Lions for a bit.
But do you think as soon as you said, oh, it could play in the Middle East, could play in the UK, is this all just about cash?
Well, I think they're just, at this stage, things are being put on the table to try and make it happen. And it's, yes and no, it is about cash. It's about getting the tournament completed and getting revenue. Because the unions, where they have been hosting test matches, they've not been holding them at full capacity. Without travelling fans.
In my opinion, it has to be more than cash, which is holding this up, or the reason to do it, right?
We're 18 months into this. This is like, how is this happening now?
Because they're nuts, aren't they? Right. But this is why I think it'd be more than that. Because what's the reason for not travelling? Presumably it's a COVID-related reason. It's not that they just don't fancy it. There's obviously a politically motivated COVID reason, okay? So to not play it in probably the second safest COVID Western country in the world, Australia... All right, if you're not going to do that, you can't go to South Africa. You can't go to Hong Kong. You certainly can't come here. you're more than welcome to, but then just go to Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's obviously more to this than meets the eye. There's obviously, it goes beyond the All Blacks saying we don't want to play. It must go to the heart of politics and what, you know, them not playing this game says to the population who are now expected to, you know, stay in their houses and waste their lives. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's a horrible situation to be in to not have the rugby, but it does seem like such a
petty, isn't it?
I hate using the word, but overreaction, given the position that Australia and New Zealand are in.
Mm. It doesn't make sense.
But I know. But once you have that stance that no risk is acceptable, then... Everything flows.
Stop playing rugby then. Well, there's a risk in rugby. Don't play it.
But that's the problem. Like, once you start down that route, then all sorts of things will just be deemed too high risk and be taken out of people's hands.
That horrible word that has become so prevalent, optics. It's not good optics.
Yeah.
Well, forget them. They don't deserve to be spoken about any longer.
A couple of teams did get a game on.
Yeah, and I didn't see it because I was stripping my belt.
you didn't miss very much. No. You missed, I think the figure was 21 Argentine penalties.
Wow, that's a lot.
Which is...
For or against?
Against Argentina.
Oh, God.
Which, that...
And a card for Lavanini.
No! That doesn't sound like the Labanini that I know.
And that just dictated the game. It dictated the pace of the game. It dictated the way that South Africa played. It dictated the way that Argentina were playing. And it just, it meant it was a pretty awful spectacle. Now, there was a couple of bright moments. The nearly try intercepted by Lucano Am was brilliant. The final try, Matera got over the line on the 86th minute, I think it was, 84th, 85th minute.
When you say that, you mean the Argentina nearly scoring a try and Lucano Am pickpocketing Argentina on his own line?
On his own, yes.
That was awesome.
That was awesome. The Matera try was good.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt sorry for Argentina throughout the game because everything they tried just wasn't going right. It was Carl Dixon refereeing, and for whatever reason, he was not happy with the Argentines. Yeah. The best bit was the Mapimpi try, though. And you might have seen a little bit of a replay of it, tracking Willy LaRue's movement for that try, which was incredible. So he gives the ball deep in Argentina's 22 on the right-hand side, near the right-hand touchline. I think he gives it to Diolande, who goes, crashes the ball in. He clears out. There is then one phase, and Willy LaRue gets up from the bottom of a ruck and sprints the full width of the field to be the second playmaker outside Andre Pollard and give, it's basically two 20-yard passes. And the work rate and the skills under that pressure from Willy LaRue are awesome for the Mapimpi try.
So I'm going to predict the futures of two players. Potential futures, I might add. I can see the future of Lucano Am being in the top 14 somewhere. I mean, that sounds fairly obvious. But I can just see him being an integral part of a Pro 14 defence in those static, more power-based games and just locking down a backline. I can see that being such an effective tactic for someone. Like a Clermont picks him up, or maybe someone with a little bit... Clermont would work, because you know, as French teams go, they're... they're pretty sort of Anglo in their approach, so that could well work. As for Mpimpi, I think he should thank his mate Chazin Colby, because he has gone over to Toulouse and he's just lit the place up. And I think if someone wants to take a punt on a winger who could do magical things in the top 14, Mpimpi, you could do a lot worse. Now I don't think he's got the ability to create something out of nothing. But he's probably a better support runner. He's probably a better out-and-out winger.
He's great defensively. He's a very good finisher. He's also older than you think.
Yeah, he's like 29, isn't he now?
It's 31.
Is 31, is he?
Mpimpi, yeah. So if he does it, he should do it now. Albeit, I'm just looking. So he is currently playing his club rugby in Japan for
He'll be all right
Red
for
Hurricane.
He'll be
so,
okay.
Yeah,
he'll
World Cup winner. Yeah.
Now, here's the second thing that I wanted to say is... what is the point in Argentina at the moment? Like, what is it that they are bringing? Because we remember them...
great national anthem and awesome stash.
Unbelievable stash. Kit. Well, it reminds me of another team, right? So we remember them beating the All Blacks, 12 months ago? You know, there's lots of things which are unprecedented. This was an unprecedented victory. The way they prepared for it, the whole lot. Are they effectively what we always wished Italy were, which is pretty rubbish most of the time, but legitimately had the quality to win.
And cry when they sing the national anthem. Yeah,
they look great. They play good rugby on occasions. They seem to have the talent, but they just don't seem to have whatever it is they need to win consistently.
Now, it's a tough one to answer because they've played the two games that they've played without really any proper warm-ups. They've played South Africa, World Cup winners, who are fresh off the back of beating the Lions. So they're playing, the number one ranked team in the world, the number one team in the world, in their own backyard twice to introduce them. I think if we see them against Australia, they will, have a very, very good chance of winning that, and maybe not beat New Zealand, but they will disrupt and make things very difficult for New Zealand.
Exactly.
So they are a good, legitimate team. They're facing the best in the world.
So people used to say about Italy, oh, they're very good with their scrummaging. They love their scrummaging. I mean, really knew that, you know, they weren't that good, really. You know?
They had a few good
Props.
Because Castro Giovanni was, I mean, he was legitimately one of the best props in the world.
Well, there was a guy before that who was meant to be absolutely incredible.
Was Ron Serro, was he Italian or Argentinian?
He was Argentinian.
Because there's a couple of them that were Italian-Argentine.
Yeah.
Lo Cicero.
Yes, and he was meant to be absolutely brilliant. Wasn't really. There was the hooker who became captain, who played at...
Giraldini.
Yeah. Ongaro.
No, Giraldini. He's like, yeah, he's a good hooker. But he's certainly not like the hookers that Argentina produce.
Well, this is what I think is key for Argentina is their DNA, and they just need to play to their what have been their strengths. They're a couple of props short of being the force they were, and also they just need to let the boys play a bit out behind because they've got some unreal gas and some real unique individual talent. So that's what they should base their game on. Try and develop a couple of props. A bit more depth in the prop area so they can be genuinely scary at set piece again. Because that was always their thing, wasn't it? They were frightening at scrummaging.
So as a Wales fan back in the day, not anymore, but as I used to be, I used to almost revel in how good we were after we were so bad for so long. The first Welsh victory I saw over England, outside of the Scott Gibbs one, was when Gavin Henson picked up Matt Tate.
2005?
It was ecstasy like no other. It was incredible. Now, I think back about that, and I think, would I rather be a Welsh fan who gets those incredible highs? But in order to get those incredible highs, I need those incredible lows as well, like the 52-point drubbing the year after to England. Or do I want a consistent Warren Gatland team? Now, I think I would like a consistent Warren Gatland team. But there again, I've never experienced the highs of an England victory like the one with Gavin Henson and Matt Tate before, since, after, ever again. What do the Argentines want? Do they want a team that reflects their national character? Or do they want a Warren Gatland team?
National character.
National character. Just...
Look at South... Ask the question of South Africa, who in the space of 4 years went from almost laughingstock, losing to Japan, not registering a rugby championship win for the best part of 10 years, to top team in the world, winning the World Cup, successful Lions tour, a successful Lions tour on the back of no rugby for 18 months.
Yeah.
That high is as high as you can possibly go.
Well, on the
and they had to suffer through the low.
Just talking about them a second, I do not understand how they're doing what they're doing at the moment, and also how you expect them to play. So imagine England play the World Cup final, and then week after they had to go into Six Nations. Like, how do you go from three Lions tests and all the physicality that involves, and then be expected to play, what, six games in the Rugby Championship? Which is still a bloody... I mean, it's an amazing thing, but it's not the high of a Lions tour.
Yeah.
Like, what they're expected to do now, it'd be almost better if they did the Rugby Championship than finished off with the Lions. But to have the high of the Lions and then now you've got to go into the Rugby Championship, it's a bloody big ask.
It's incredibly tough. And the one thing you could compare it to would be like Exeter, Saracens and Toulouse have done over the last few years, and Leinster have done over the last few years, which is going and playing the Heineken Cup or European Champions Cup and then a week or two later playing the Premiership or Pro 14 or Top 14 final. But that is two one-off games. That is not a three-test series and a six-test tournament.
Yeah, because New Zealand aren't looking at this saying, oh, South Africa won't be up for it. Like, they're like, we're going to kill South Africa. It's a test match. It's their biggest game probably in the last 2 or 3 years. But South Africa just had their biggest game in 12 years.
Yeah.
Well, outside of
the World Cup final.
But you get the point.
Yeah. That's the bit I really wanted to see was the New Zealand South Africa game, or the two New Zealand South Africa games.
I really hope
we get that, because it is. I mean, this game ended up being exactly how South Africa wanted to play the Lions tests,
yes,
which was stop, start, stop, start. And there were so many times where South Africa were getting good front football, go for ball. Argentina would transgress at the ruck. Carl Dixon's arm would go out, and South Africa know they've got the penalty. They know they've got a kickable penalty, and they weren't really interested in playing. They just, oh, we'll take the penalty. We'll slow it down. We'll take the penalty. Take the 3 points. Keep the scoreboard ticking, and just move on. And it ended up being an awful game to watch.
I can't remember what program I was watching. It referenced football. I don't know if it was a football program or if it was a program involving football. Right, small difference, obviously.
I was going to say, where's the...
Yeah, because I'm not sure if it was... It's something Italian, and I can't remember if it's like a documentary on Italian football or it's a documentary on
football,
Italy.
Football was the context or yeah, the content.
But yes, exactly. But then there was a bit about football, and it was Lazio versus Roma.
Okay. Oh, the Rome Derby, yeah.
Rome Derby. And they're interviewing this old lady. She goes, I really hope... that I can't remember which team it was, but this is what she hoped, right? This is an old lady. She wanted her team to win 1-0 by own goal. Like, that's what she wanted. is that what South Africans want? In a rugby context.
That's probably a good analogy for this game. It's like,
I want South Africa to go to New Zealand and win 1-0 with an own goal. That's the sort of, that's how I want to see New Zealand destroyed. With anti-rugby.
Well, I'm going to just speak up for Argentina for a second to say that with the whole situation still up in the air over where these games will be played, if they will be played, Argentina, I've just said, to their credit, wherever they are, we'll be there. Just let us know.
Yeah.
Good effort.
Yeah, and this, fair play to them, because they did it last year when they had so much quarantine. They were locked away for months at a time. And they performed unbelievably last year. And they performed, were it not for those penalties, and I feel that some of the penalties were pedantic and unnecessary at times, and they did really slow the game down. And it might have been a slightly different, it might have been a different scoreline. I think South Africa were always in control of this one, but that Argentine team is a bloody good team.
Mm.
And Bruni, the number 8, yeah, what a man. What a specimen the man is.
Enjoying his work.
Oh, look at him. Look at his jawline.
Oh, yeah.
Crikey, yeah.
He is a...
He's a very thick neck.
Thick neck, strong beard, incredible jawline.
Let's look at him again.
Oh, handsome.
And that kit as well.
He reminds you of someone famous. Not an Argentine number 8. I can't think. He looks like someone very famous.
He looks awesome.
He could be like a Marvel superhero, couldn't he?
He could be, yes.
Yeah, who's he play for? Never heard of the guy.
Jaguars, I think.
Oh, does he? There you go. That's probably why then.
Yeah, I think. I'll just double check.
Yeah. It's quite remarkable what is expected from both Argentina and South Africa in terms of their travel schedule.
And they're the ones that don't complain or don't make a fuss, just get on with it.
I tell a lie, he's joined... So he has been Jaguars, but he's joined Van in the Pro de Deux.
Wow.
He played against Jersey in a pre-season friendly in a 25-all draw.
Did he? Wow, great knowledge.
There's some value there if he's going to Van.
Or is there?
Well, yeah, it depends on which side of the value is. But yeah, he's worth a few quid. He's a handy player.
Just jumping around some of the other stories then. By the way... Lou Diaga's got a mullet now. He'll be bringing that back to Manchester. So
oh, wonderful news.
Got a mullet. And he got man of the match as well, didn't he?
I'm not sure. I'd lost the will to live at that point.
Anyway, the mullet might have done its trick again.
It was his 50th cap, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Elsewhere, Exeter received a shipment of egg whites in bottles. There's the, you know, they've got Super Eggs as one of their sponsor on their back of their shorts or on their shirt or somewhere. Well, Super Eggs, Super Egg Whites is now a little recovery or protein drink.
Have you ever tried to buy egg whites? Or
you can buy them in like those paper cartons.
Cartons in the supermarket,
Oh, right, okay.
Because it's quite handy if you're making, say, a load of whiskey sours.
Omelettes, yeah.
So when I got on my health kick, I thought, right, I'm going to get some egg whites and just, you know, add them to omelettes or whatever it is. Just, an easy way. I hate wasting of yolks.
I was going to say, what do you do with yolks if you just use the egg white? There must be something you can use it for.
There is something you can use. Custard.
Custard.
Custard,
custard ice cream.
Helping the health kick.
Well, not really.
I'll tell you, last weekend went round to my parents' house and my mum had made a load of homemade ice cream. And Thomas had some mint choc chip, homemade mint choc chip ice cream, and he was loving it.
Of course
he was. I was like, Mum, why is this ice cream so good? Because I had a bit. I was like, wow, this is really good. She's like, well, it's so good because I make my own custard base, so mm-hmm. proper egg yolk custard base for the ice cream rather than just using milk or cream. And there's half a bottle of creme de menthe in it. And I'm like,
really? Wow.
Why are you giving it to my 2-year-old then?
Well, why not?
It was delicious.
The Logan way. How the Logans live.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
There you go. Get your egg yolks to, I just couldn't, to Phil's folks' house.
I just couldn't quite get over how disgusting that they are. What? So they just sit in this little gelatinous stuff. And
have you ever drank raw eggs?
I've never done it.
Yes, I have. No, hang on. No, I'll tell you what I did. Someone made me a whiskey sour, right? And we're in a bar in Didsbury. What I did wasn't that disgusting. What the other guy did is actually unbelievably foul. And so instead of the egg yolk going to waste, my friend next to him said, just give him the egg yolk. I said, all right, I'll try the egg yolk. It was absolutely foul. But get this. Our club captain had just come back from rugby tour that day. Do you know what his tour trick is? He eats a whole carton of eggs, shell included. Put some egg in his mouth, crunches it down.
Oh, God.
He'll do it all day long. And like, I heave. When I watch this, I can't watch it. I wish he'd stop. He just goes on and on. By the end of the day, he must have had something like, I'm guessing like, over 1,000 calories in eggs. In raw eggs.
Is it Cool Hand Luke?
Oh, I don't know. I've got no idea.
Cool Hand Luke's eating 50 hard-boiled eggs, isn't it?
Oh, no, these are just raw.
Shells included.
Shells included. He crunches these shells down. He crunches them down.
But people do that, don't they? Just chuck in like 4 or 5 eggs in a glass and just drink them down without even stirring.
James Haskell does that, no problem.
I have done it in the past.
Was that a pre-season thing?
No, I was doing it for a period of time, more for a time thing. I never particularly enjoyed it, but I can do it. More for a time thing where I was like, right, I need some calories. I'm going to the gym at 6 a.m. I need some calories. I can't be bothered getting up to make. So I'll have some, whatever it is, some bread or some cereal. And then I'll have 3 eggs just cracked into a glass and drink.
I wish I could do it because it'd be so...
It'd be really cool to be able to do.
And it'd be efficient.
It is very efficient.
You can stop at the shop, crack, 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 crack. Boom, protein shake done. Gym.
Yeah.
But I can't do it because I'm a coward.
Just a protein shake. Delicious strawberry protein shake.
Yeah,
same.
Anyway, so that's an interesting egg detour. What other news have you got, Tim?
I was just wondering what other. It'd be interesting to know what the regime is of players in pre-season now, because things do change and move on. They constantly are evolving. We know that some people Phil used to play with would do their pre-season training after they'd taken some Hemo Rage.
Yep, definitely.
Pre-game workout.
2 tubs of Hemo Rage, boys.
I think there's no substitute for caffeine, though, just a straight-up coffee.
Caffeine is good.
Before you do a workout.
Yeah. Caffeine is good. Just a bit of protein and a bit of some carbs, just something.
Mm. Well, shall we start reviewing some teams? Because we've got 3 teams to do this week.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say one final thing. Was the Major League Draft was this week.
Okay.
And they had a combine as well.
Yes, I saw that.
Which is very cool.
Ben Foden did all right. I'd say he did all right. He did some running.
He went and did it.
He didn't do the combine, but he did the event for social media.
To set some time.
Yeah, so he set his time and he looked pretty quick.
Excellent. I wonder what his...
It was 4.8 for his 40.
Really? Yeah. Which is not bad.
Yeah, it's decent. I reckon I could do 4.8.
Wow. Let's see. Maybe we should have a combine.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, well, if you want to see what my athletic prowess is really like, you have every chance on the 4th of September.
Yes.
For Ben Moon's testimonial, which, of course, I will be playing. In a team with... If this is false advertising, I apologise. But when I was told I was playing, I understand, in my team is James Hook, Charlie Hodge and Mike Tindall, Tom James, and somebody else on the wing. Somebody else. I don't know who has been confirmed. But opposite me, I've got an absolute picnic in the back row. Kai Horseman, Thomas Waldron and...
Tom Johnson.
Easy.
I'll dominate them.
Easy.
Absolutely dominate them. Particularly around the... Oh, no! Julian Salvi. So I'll get the current Exeter defence coach. So I'll have my way around that breakdown, no problem.
Also, just what I like about this is one thing you don't get too much in the world at the minute is people saying, do you know what? I got that wrong. I've changed my mind. That doesn't happen.
No,
quite
doesn't.
Often people tend to double down or not admit when they get
Interestingly, the double down thing is that is one of the things from Philip Tetlock, the Tetlock Cup, was it. He obviously studied forecasters and super forecasting.
Oh, that's where Tetlock comes in. Yeah. Going back to the dossier at the start of the podcast, I wish I'd asked where the Tetlock thing came from. But there you go.
Well, I'm sure Hannah Snow would give us a far more in depth explanation. But one of the points I seem to remember was that the kind of two types of people broadly in terms of forecasting: one who take on new information and make minor adjustments to their model going forwards, and others who, if something goes against them, they actually double down and they tend to get more wrong trying to prove they were right in the past. If that
been
makes
here before.
Sense.
Do you understand super forecasting at all? Because it sounds like a bunch of excuses to me.
Depends what you mean, because I've read a bit about it.
So there is a wonderful podcast, Talking Politics podcast, when they go and talk to Super Forecaster. And I've listened to that one. Yeah, and he tries to explain. So anyone who's doing like the retrospective rugby analysis, well, actually all analysis is retrospective. So anyone doing rugby analysis or betting analysis or whatnot should listen to this, because it is really interesting. But then there's certain things in it. So he'll say, this event will happen 2 in 3 times. Which means when it does happen for the third time, I wasn't wrong. It was meant so like Donald Trump winning is the one they used. So what we said is
Nate Silver is the one.
This is exactly what Nate Silver in America did when the Trump thing happened. He said,
said it was 58% or 60%.
Yeah, I said Hillary Clinton has 75%. That means I still said there was a significant chance that Trump could win.
Yeah. I don't know where I stand on this, because in my mind, 75% means they're winning.
Yeah, and this is...
Whatever the percentage was.
But. And this is part of the problem that we live in a world where everyone expects everything to be binary. You just have to go on Twitter to understand that.
But with super forecasting, right, particularly with elections, here would be my thought. If it's like a thing that you do, right, like a coin flip, you can see why it would be a certain... And if you had a weight... Well, then you can see why it'd be 75-25, you know, based on those things. But when you have masses and masses of people behaving independently, it strikes me that if you have a 75% prediction, that should actually happen, if that makes sense.
So
I don't think you can have a 75% prediction is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I do get that you shouldn't have a 75% prediction if you are doing things like polling. If you're running a poll and you are accurately if in your poll has a large enough sample size and you're sampling a broad enough demographic of people, then you should be able to turn that not to... You should be able to get to a point where it is more binary.
And asking the question in the appropriate way. There's so many variables in all of those things.
I think I know what I'm trying to say now.
Go on.
And I'd love to know how stupid this... I'm looking forward to listening back to this to hear how stupid I am. If your coin is weighted so it's 75% one way, 25% the other, and you flip it, there's a 1 in 4 chance that it is...
Right.
If we have 100 coins weighted this way and we flip them all, there's a good chance we get 25-75. Is that right?
It might not be exactly, but if you flip that coin a million times, it should trend to exactly 75-25.
And the more coins we have flipping simultaneously, the more likely it is to be 25-75.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So on an individual event,
I
completely understand why a thing might happen. But across millions of individuals voting, I do not understand how you can get that so wrong to 75% and it not happen.
Because those variables which Phil talked about, if you're polling a large enough number of people of an appropriately representative demographic and then asking questions worded in the correct, say, maybe neutral way, then you will get all... But there's lots of occasions where people get those things wrong.
But isn't the idea... So if you vote 4 times, if I vote 4 times, I might vote 3 times one way because of the day I'm having and the mood that I'm in. And then 1 time I might say, right, I'm going to vote for the other party because of something which I've seen on the streets or something which I've...
Yeah,
heard.
The float... Because there are some people who always vote one way or the other, but there are also floating voters.
And then you increase that by millions and millions of people and you still got it wrong.
but anyway. Wrong on an incredibly horrendous level.
Yeah.
Like, right, they got it. Didn't just get it wrong. They got it really, really wrong.
Anyway, so that's that's why I think super forecasting is nonsense.
Anyway, well, this started
Does depend on the event. Yeah, sorry.
No, not at all. It's interesting. But this started because I was just saying how refreshing it was when someone says, "Oh, you know what? I got that wrong. I've changed my mind." And that person that deserves credit for doing so is Sam Warburton, who said after the storm got whipped up about his line saying, "What's it going to take someone dying on a rugby field before things change?" He's come out and said, "Do you know what? No, I don't. I actually wrote that, or that was written a couple of years ago, and I don't think that. I think rugby's made some really great strides, and I don't stand by that comment now. I don't think rugby's in that level of situation."
I'm going to disagree with some Hobson. I think it's inevitable someone will die playing the sport. People have already. Oh, but what is he saying? The way we're going, there's going to be more deaths?
I think the initial line was, is it going to take someone dying on a rugby field
to make these changes?
And actually he's saying the changes have been made. It's in a much better position. And yeah. I don't stand by those comments that I made then.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's inevitable that someone at some point will die playing the sport. It might be no. In fact, we had a guy die.
Chap in Wales, 31 years old, heart issue in a memorial game in South Wales.
Horrendous. It just will happen. And I think when it does happen, it's important to look at the whole body of evidence of what has been done in the past and how dangerous the game is, rather than make a decision based on that one event.
Oh, yeah, and yeah.
So. Anyway,
yes.
So good for Sam.
Yeah. And
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So we will continue now. Our little look ahead to the new season, which is coming in the middle of September for the Premiership. And we'll look at a few clubs and just quickly give them the once-over. We did two teams last week. It was Saracens and Worcester.
Working away from the bottom up,
mm-hmm.
which brings us to Gloucester as the next least worst team.
We can summarise this with one question. Is this year going to be Gloucester's year?
I'm pretty confident I know the answer to this one.
I am more confident than I've been for a long time that I know the answer to this one.
Pretty certain this will be no.
No.
Very much no.
No.
So, who would like to kick off with Gloucester? So I've got some thoughts.
Go on, you tell us and I'll try and fill in any gaps.
Who are the ins and outs squad-wise and where are they at in terms of personnel?
So there's not a huge number of ins and outs. So you've had a few players leave. So Willie Hines going will be a bit of a blow. Matt Garvey goes. Matt Banahan's retired.
Yeah, nothing major there. They've got young guys to come in, so they're not losing anyone that's front line really. With Willie Hines aside, but a very significant signing at fly half for them.
Adam Hastings.
Is Adam Hastings a top end fly half?
I think he is a good fly half. I think he's international calibre. That doesn't mean he's top 10 in the world.
So this is sort of like when Steve Diamond, before Sale had money, said he's going to sign an international fly half and was linked to Rory...
Jennings?
What was his name?
Oh, he played at Wasps and he played at Glasgow, I think.
Rory Jackson. With the best will in the world, he's definitely in an international fly half. Yes. However, we know what we know the reality of the situation.
And I think Hastings is a cut above that. I think Hastings is a good fly half. I actually think he'll do well in his second stint in the Premiership because he was at Bath years ago, which wasn't very good.
I think he had a fair shot there. To be fair,
I saw him play in one game, so he probably didn't.
Did we see the same game when he? Less than adequate on that day.
He was definitely less than adequate on that day.
Just one very concerning thing. and again, I want to check if this is correct. This is apparently Gloucester's second kit.
I think there's a reason behind that.
They've got turquoise shorts. And I don't understand that the actual shirt itself is not significantly different from the home shirt, because it's still hoops, white hoops, but with a thin red line and a black hoop.
I don't mind that.
I don't mind that, but it's just not, the shorts, not significantly different from the home strip.
They do.
The turquoise shorts is weird.
That is strange.
And the third kit is not good.
No, that's not good. No, they're, no, that is not good.
No, I'm just looking back. Their away shirt last season or two seasons ago was turquoisey. Yeah,
I think there's some reason for that, but I don't know why.
Oh, maybe it's just Wikipedia's got this wrong. I really hope so.
I wouldn't trust that, because that does look pretty bad.
That does look bad.
Yeah. So, Gloucester.
Yes.
There's a few things about Gloucester which worry me. It's not so much the departures this year, although the people have, I think Garvey's a very useful Premiership player still.
Yeah,
I think Hines is a very useful Premiership player still. And I think when you're at the bottom end of the table, a team at the bottom end of the table could do with them. And thankfully for Worcester, they picked them up. So you know, the fact that Worcester think these guys are really valuable, I tend to agree with that. In the situation that Worcester find themselves in, which is almost identical to the situation that I think Gloucester will find themselves in.
Yes.
So I would like to point that out first. But the actual departures that mattered didn't happen this year. They happened last year. They lost something like 11 of their starters. People like Mostart, who with them has done great things since. Groblaw was another one. They've lost really key guys, and then of course Sippers went off the rails and he had to leave, and now they've finally replaced him. So all of that stuff happened last year, and I think that is still impacting on to this year. How are they going to play? They're going to be very conventional. I think that Skivington is a guy who is not dissimilar in his approach, and it's not just because they're both big second rows, to Borthwick.
Okay.
You know, they are very focused on set piece. They're very detail orientated. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to what Skivington says, he's really into shock horror work rate. So work rate, details in defence. Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
And because of that, I think that Gloucester will be in a lot of games, but I don't think they're going to win a lot.
Yeah. Now, if they're in a lot of games, they could have one of the most exciting back threes in the league.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you can get them all out away from internationals and fit at the same time. But a back three that lines up with Johnny May, Lewis Rees-Sammet and Ollie Thorley is amazing.
Yeah.
But whether you can actually get the platform to give those guys the ball in the space that they need is another matter.
And for them, in terms of the pack, if everybody stayed fit for the whole season, which never happens, if everyone did, they've got a quality pack. But they just don't get the value out of guys like Fraser Balmain and Val Rapava-Ruskin, who right there, two solid Premiership props.
Very good props.
But you don't see them enough, and the depth is the concern for Gloucester. We saw that with their second row last year. Andrew Davidson, the Scot, has come in at lock, which will help. But you get a couple of injuries in a couple of positions, and massively they miss Jake Pelledri. He makes an enormous difference to
and
that team.
And his injury sounds like one which isn't going to be healing up anytime soon. I mean, it does. It sounds absolutely horrendous. Like, if they have him back, they've got the thing that they need. So I think their work rate and their attitude and everything, if you watch them play, is pretty good, which is why, if you look at their games, I think they're one of the most unlucky teams in the Premiership. Like, I think they've got more losses by a single score than any other team. And I could have made that up completely, but, you know,
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, it sounds reasonable, right? It sounds reasonable, so go with that. Now, Jake Pelledri is an actual difference maker. So when you're working hard in defence, that's one thing. But if you want to be effective going forward, you need to get over the game line. I know it's boring, but that's exactly what you need to do. Because if you do, then they've got some incredible talent. People like Mark Atkinson, who can spread the ball around. They've got those guys in the back three, and of course they've got Lion Chris Harris too.
Yeah, and let's just be fair to Gloucester for a second, because not only did they not have Jake Pelledri, difference maker in the pack, probably their best forward.
Yeah.
But they didn't they had the whole sippers issue, which landed on them as well. So
landed on them. I mean, what were they not expecting? Well, it?
Yeah, you do. You're right. It did.
Well, they didn't have anyone to replace
it. It was it was partway through the season. You could have predicted that.
You could have predicted
it. But you are right.
You didn't need Dominic Cummings and the super forecasters to work that one out.
Tetlock.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah, but he's definitely not going to do it.
It was going to happen 1 in 10 times. So, yeah.
It's definitely not going to happen for Bath, though. Bath have got him locked down.
Bath have got exactly the management structure needed to get the best out of Sippers. We know
precisely.
That.
Precisely. Just on your point about the most unlucky or the winning the... or losing the most by the smallest margins, it does stack up with the league table last year. So Gloucester had the least worst, so the best negative points difference in the bottom half of the table.
Mm.
So all the teams around them, Bath, Wasps, London Irish, Newcastle and Worcester, had worse negative points difference.
Gloucester need to get more try bonus points and less losing bonus points. And a ball carrying number 8 and a fly half could make those things possible.
Do you know who they have? They've still got Ackman on their books.
Yeah, and
still
Ben
got Ben Morgan on their books.
They've got Lewis Ludlow. England captain Lewis Ludlow.
Yeah, I tell you who I love is Freddie Clark. I think that
Freddie Clark's great. Right,
that boy can bang.
Jordy Reid.
Yeah, they've got some bloody good players. Yeah, they just can't put it together. It's the attack which is
putting it together.
I wonder if. And this is not just Sippers banging for no reason. But I wonder if he did sort of slow down the attack. So he's brilliant at what he does. There's no choice about how talented he is. But it had to be that system, that way, all the time. And without him, I wonder if they can get these guys onto the ball, get them over the game line. It won't be as sexy as what Sippers does, but it might be more effective.
And the Sippers conundrum is... no one really plays like Sippers.
How do you replace him?
Yeah, exactly. And he sets up things his own way, but it means no one else can just slot in and transition from a Sippers system to a non-Sippers system.
Mm. Higher or lower than 10th?
I'm going to go 9th. That's where I think they'll be.
I think 10th.
If this is possible to say... they're going to be the best 9th place team we've seen in a long time. Because I think they'll be competitive 80% of their games.
I think they'll be roughly where they were last season, this season.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what the expectation is on George Skivington, whether that will put him under pressure. I don't know.
I've got a feeling not.
I would suspect not. I mean, have they got enough money to put him under pressure?
Yeah. Fair question. I think when you go for a coach like Skivington, you've got to let him build.
Yeah.
Same problem with Worcester, right? They've given this coaching gig to Jonathan Thomas, who's got no prior at being a head coach. Mm-hmm. You've got to let him build. You've got to give him the chance to make mistakes. I don't think there's relegation next year, is there? Or is there?
No. Right. So it's a 13-team league, so every team gets a bye week intermittently.
Yeah.
And then no relegation.
If I was given a gig, and I think it's almost... the law that every coach, when they get given a gig, goes, "Oh, I'm glad to be here. It's a 5-year plan, three-year plan, 5-year plan."
It's such a gap. But I don't know where I stand on this because Ben Darwin, who knows everything about everything, says you need time to settle into your to your combinations. I think he's right. On the other hand, go win games.
Yeah, you have to do a bit of both, but you want to be able to. It's easier to buy into the 5-year plan if you're starting to get some results. Even if it's, you don't expect to win every game, but you want to be seeing the transition. Like, look at Leicester. Like, for the last few years, Leicester have been awful. They're lucky not to get relegated on a couple of occasions. In the last season, Borthwick took them, did they finish 6th? They did finish 6th. They won half of their games. But you saw the improvement from the preceding year, that you saw the trajectory. So that was a very good season. It was terrible by historic Leicester standards, but it's a very good season because you can see how the Borthwick plan is going to come to play.
Do you know what the ultimate nightmare is for a new coach? The 5-year plan, the players buy into it, but then everyone figures out your 5-year plan in about match 6. So maybe you win your first, you win 4 out of 6.
4 out of 6. Very good, yeah.
They're really trending in the right direction.
Steve Diamond was the master at this. I remember him at Sale. He went, "Well, you know, you've got to look at this as a 3-year plan. And then on year three, they were like 11th. And he went, this is year zero. I think it's the year they went to the AJ Bell. We've got a new stadium. So this is year zero. Yeah.
Well, 3 year plan starts again.
Very seldom was Dan's wrong.
It worked.
It did.
Broadly speaking for them, there was improvement, which came with the cash. Who finished ninth last year?
Gloucester finished 11th.
Oh, 11th, sorry.
Newcastle finished 10th. So on to Newcastle. So Newcastle brought in a few Quinns old boys. Obviously.
Two I've got in my mind. Mike Brown.
Three,
and
four.
Nathan Earle.
Okay. And George Merrick.
Okay.
And Ollie Lindsay.
Ollie Lindsay Haig on a short-term deal.
From England Sevens.
I don't really know about Newcastle. Is the answer? I really don't know.
I would say they haven't lost anyone of huge significance. So
no.
So they've upgraded their squad.
So I think Newcastle are the classic team that other teams can figure out. They run a system of shock horror. This will surprise you. Where they want to be the hardest working. Find me the team that doesn't want to be the hardest working team. But this is what their players say. This is what they say they want to be. They want to be the hardest working team. And they've got lads in that squad who can legitimately say they are some of the hardest working lads in the Premiership. Like Gary Graham does nothing but graft.
Mark Wilson.
Nothing but graft. I mean, nothing but graft.
Yeah.
Will Welsh is another one of them. They've got loads of these lads who are not massive. They remind me of a team in North Wales called Nant Conway, and they're all uniformly, 5'9 to 5'10 and work incredibly hard. Like, there's not a special one among them, but they just graft. So, defensively and all the rest of it, that's what they'll do. We saw it being remarkably successful against the superstars of Bath. Where I think they can get figured out is the attacking patterns run by Dave Walder, because they are complicated. And when you have complicated attacking patterns and unique attacking patterns, that's when people go, oh, look, they're doing this sort of thing. So I can't remember if it's Tom Brady or it was Will, what's his name?
Addison.
Will Addison, who said on one of the Rugby Dungeons, like, if we see something that we like in a analysis video, or if we do something which we think is really cool, next week everyone else will be doing it. So anything that you do unique, we'll be all over the league within two or three weeks.
Yeah.
And I do think Walder's a unique attacking mind, but I also think that's one of the problems, because you can then figure that out. So then after that, what do you have?
You've got to keep being ahead of the curve.
Yeah, then that's when you need, boring again, guys who can get over the game line, because you can't get game plan for that.
Which? Big Lou?
You missed one.
Hey?
You missed one.
Missed one?
Just much, much bigger, much more of a threat to the game line. For Newcastle.
Carl Ferns.
Correct.
Fernsy.
That boy will be getting over multiple game lines.
Yeah, now he's had a proper pre-season under his belt. He'll be conditioned to play English rugby, not French rugby.
Exactly.
French rugby diet, perhaps.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I mean, Newcastle will be used to this. People writing them off. I'm not writing them off, but I think they're going to dip down from where they were.
So, I mean, there are only two places. Well, actually, in this league, there are three places below them. So they did finish in 10th. They could finish 11th, 12th, or 13th.
Oh, bearing in mind Saracens are coming up, it's not a hard thing to go. They're going to...
Everyone will probably shift. Everyone apart from the top two or three teams will shift down one place.
Yeah, I'm undecided.
It's because they've got some really good players, like you say.
But they've got good leadership too. So like Dean Richards, in another world, could have had a long, old and successful stint with England, except the Bloodgate thing, which let's just forget that for now.
Yeah.
He would have been the England coach. I'm certain he would have been the England coach at some point. Dave Walder's a really good head coach. They've got a really good staff. It's just hard to... I don't know. I don't know. They could go either way. So I'm not going to put a prediction on this and be safe.
I do like them. And they're a predictable team, and they will definitely win games. They will win tough games at home in the middle of winter. They will grind out results.
Their halfbacks might be a little... I mean, I quite like Schroeder. I think he's a cool player. I don't think he's a top-class scrum half, but I think he's good.
And Mickey Young's a good, solid scrum half.
Yeah, is he going to coaching next for Newcastle?
Don't know.
I don't know if he's...
They're not going to miss many players to internationals, and even someone like Mark Wilson, who they have been without before via injury or when they're in the Championship or with England. I think they'll get him 22 games.
Toby Flood's looked a bit suspect at times.
Taulupe Flood.
Well, that's the bit that I'd be worried about is the fly, because they've got three fly halves on the books. They've got Conan, they've got Hodgson, Joel Hodgson, and they've got Toby Flood. And
like, who's your starter out of those three?
Conan's going to be the starter.
No. Who would your starter be?
Conan.
I'd say Conan as well, actually.
Probably Conan, but I don't know. I guess my point is, if you're debating who the starter is, and you're not debating it because there are two amazing, it's not like you've got, I don't know, George Ford and Danny Cipriani, both at your disposal. You're debating it.
I'd love to see that meeting room, by the
way. It wouldn't go well.
No, it wouldn't.
Is Mike Ford attack coach?
Yes!
That's going to be interesting.
Joint attack coach, and I'll think of the other attack coach shortly. Joint attack coach with Don Waldock.
Perfect. Nev Edwards, skills coach?
Yes! Get him in!
Yeah, the fly half situation does worry me. Toby Flood just turned 36.
That's how old he is. Crikey.
He's still a decent player, but his best days are behind him.
Yeah. If Toby Flood has to play 10, I can't see him being useful in any other situation for Newcastle. That sounds like a horrible knock.
He won him a couple of games with some nudges at little kick-throughs at 12, so...
He was playing 30. He was wearing a 13 jersey for Toulouse at
one
point.
I know he was. But that was a long time ago.
Yeah, yes. You know, not right now.
I'd love to, how do you think he'd go at 13 for Toulouse at the moment?
Has Lucano Am moved to be his opposite man at this moment in time?
Not yet.
Okay.
No, if you're going to extend your career in the backs and you're a really good fly half, that's the place to be. Or fullback, because they've got one of them now.
Who is 35?
Really good one.
Yeah.
With some excellent wingers around him.
Yeah.
That could be a really smart signing, actually.
He has got a couple of great, great wingers around him. Radwan is legitimately awesome.
Mm.
Like, did you see? I think he scored a few tries, but one of the tries he scored against either Canada or USA was ridiculous.
Yes.
Like, next level speed.
Well, have you seen the one in training?
In the England training.
Good God.
Yeah.
So with Mike Brown, here's something which is worth pondering. And I don't know how true this is. No, I do know it's true. I know it's absolutely true. I just don't know what the impact will be. Harlequins didn't used to play him on plastic pitches. Mm. Now, that's a problem if you're Newcastle, unless you only want to play him away. Except for at Worcester and Saracens and whoever else has a plastic pitch.
Mm.
So maybe he's sorted that out for enough money. I don't know. Maybe, a couple of £100,000 makes your knees okay on plastic pitches. I don't know how that works.
Well, a couple of £100,000 less than he was getting paid. Because yes. He might be getting paid somewhere close to his big money Quinns deal, but...
Can't see it.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'd be quite the same.
Yeah. Just out of interest, right? Say if you're Mike Brown.
Yeah.
And you're looking at Newcastle being your new home. Now, do you say... Do you go for the security of a two-year deal, knowing that your deal's not going to be very good? Or do you think, do you know what? When I finished in the Premiership Champions this year, I'm one of the biggest reasons that they got as far as they did, because I was superb. I'll sign a one-year deal, and then someone will pick me up at the end of that deal, either top 14 or Prem, and I'll just prove exactly how awesome that I am. Which way does it go? What would you do?
I think if he was just living a bachelor life and he's got money in the bank... He's done very well out of rugby. I might be tempted to do what you just did, but he's got a young family.
Yeah.
And actually, you don't want to go, right, we're moving this summer, and then we might be moving again next summer. Nah.
Depends where you're moving to, though, right? La Rochelle. I could see him in the top 14, 100%.
I could see him in MLR, perhaps.
I could see him in MLR. Anyway.
Which is actually, that is one of the interesting things from Newcastle and Gloucester, the two teams that we've just looked at. They've both picked up MLR players, only one each. So Wian Conradi he's a Namibian but from New England Free Jacks,
yes,
has gone to Gloucester, and
Irish lock, former Ulsterman,
Matthew Dalton from
Utah Warriors. I would tell you about the Namibian from New England Free Jacks, but we got an email a few weeks ago saying that I shouldn't talk about MLR, so I can't talk about MLR. So Thanks, you absolute loser that emailed in. There you go. You're not going to hear about that guy in detail.
Well, it's the interesting thing is it's an avenue for guys who otherwise wouldn't have necessarily been playing and wouldn't have been available. So it's keeping guys in the game. And Matthew Dalton is, I think he's 22. Yeah, 22, 6'6", 118 kg. What more do you want?
And just ask Tyburn about not really having a lot of options and taking what you can get and then turning it round into something special.
AJ McGinty found himself playing at Life University. Turns out he's really good at rugby.
Amazing at rugby.
Yes. It happens. People have different paths.
Can you imagine? Imagine AJ McGinty, that Irish accent, those big brown eyes at an American university.
Do you know what?
I'm sure he loved his rugby there.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I can't imagine about AJ McGinty, right? He's a sort of player that needs good players around him because of his range of skills. I can't imagine. Do you know, like, I'm just trying to think of a player who would just look unbelievable. Like Adam Radwan, right? If you put him on like a level 8 pitch, he would score how many tries? 1 million a game? Something like that?
Yeah.
2 million tries a game. I don't even know if that's possible, but you could do that.
Sub 10 second 100 metres. They kick as far as they can. He just sprints time after time.
I can imagine AJ McGinty looking like a pretty good level 8 10. But that'd be it. Like, because he doesn't have that sort of explosive athleticism. Like, he's a different sort of player. And he ratchets it up every time that he plays in a better team. But I just can't imagine him in... I can't imagine him being the guy in America going, yeah, that's the guy. That is the guy to win Pro 14 on his second attempt and eventually take Sale Sharks to the Premiership.
Mm. One day. Perhaps.
Who's next then? He was 10th last year.
So, 9th last year.
9th, sorry.
It was London Irish. God. Which would be 10th. Now there's 13th.
There's only one guy around here that knows about London Irish.
Yeah, and I can tell you they've let a few players go. None hugely significant, with the exception, I would say, of Blair Cowan. Who's been an absolute warrior for them. He's moving on in age, and they've got players coming through like Ben O'Donnell in the academy who they can look to try and fill that gap. But he will be a loss. Other than that, I think significant signings, Ben White, scrum half. They let Meehan go at scrum half, and Ben White they've got in. So another young Englishman to replace an ageing...
Help me out here, Ben White.
International.
Where is Ben White from?
Leicester.
Promising
scrum half.
Of course he is.
He's quite good.
But not as promising as Van Portfleet.
No.
So Ben White, yeah. I can't believe that. I dropped the ball on that one. Ben White was captaining Leicester Tigers. He must have thought that the path was basically laid out for him. Van Portfleet shows up, Youngs comes back, and then they sign bloody Wigglesworth.
But he's 23. And Ben White's good, and he's 23.
He's very good.
And it's nice to see that London Irish are doing that. They've used the big names and expensively acquired foreign international players for the purpose, and now they're supplementing it and gradually building a bit more of an identity with Irish guys. In fact, they signed another Irishman, didn't they, from someone that's played a few times for Leinster, but not really. Hugh O'Sullivan, there you go.
There you are.
So it's a squad player, scrum half, wing, fullback.
They've got all the basic ingredients, haven't they, to be a really good team. Mm. They need consistency. They need a bit of nastiness, and they need to just bring all that talent in. Anyway, they sort of got it together. The European Cup game against Cardiff is probably their best performance of the season. And when they click, they do look pretty good. They've probably got one of the best, top three fly-halves in the entire league?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way he plays.
Got back to his best. Or there or thereabouts. And they've got some really talented outside backs as well.
Yeah.
Like the back three, the young English back three of Hassel Collins, Ben Loader and Tom Parton.
Tom Parton, yes, that's the one.
Awesome last season. And it meant that someone else who's left, it's a shame to see him go because he's so talented, but the injury meant he never really played. And these guys' form meant he was never missed was Waisaki Naholo.
Yes.
Who we never got to see anywhere near his best. I don't even know if he played a single game last season for the first team.
He played two or three. I mean, it took him 10 games just to get fit in his first season.
Yeah,
like he was miles off the pace.
He was he's such a talented player, but he's now gone.
You know, I think the way Irish play is Paddy Jackson, as you say, and it's Curtis Rona. And those two give them... Paddy Jackson's got the ability to find the space where it is. Curtis Rona creates enough of a diversion to give all those guys you just mentioned.
And Tweety.
Yeah, Tweety.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Those two being running threats from set plays.
So there is... a distinct step change, I think, when you get to London Irish compared to, say, Gloucester and Worcester and whoever else is coming up. Oh, sorry, ignore them, right? they just don't count in this conversation. What you have in Worcester and Gloucester are two very honest, hard-working teams, particularly in defence. What you have in Irish is I don't think they have that. You know, do you when I said we want to be the hardest-working team?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Irish don't say that. That is a team which don't say this.
They want to be pack of the year 2013.
Exactly. They are very good attacking, though. So they do tend to score a lot of tries, and they tend to keep up with their opposition in the exact opposite way.
Good fancy fancy rugby draft team.
Yes,
players.
It is.
A few dangerous outside backs.
Yeah, you want to be thinking about London Irish players for fancy rugby, actually. That's a great shout.
Because that back three is electric, and they play pretty much every game.
Yeah. Yeah, they rely on other things other than hard work to get their points and stay in games, which is their attack. If they can just... they're kind of a bad Bristol.
The question is, can you get one more year out of Sean O'Brien and Steve Maffey and Rob Simmons and Adam Coleman and Augustine Creevy?
One of those is going to fail. There's multiple points of failure there.
Can you get one more year?
Well, Creevy actually ended up playing very well towards the end.
He did.
And you think, okay.
Maffey had a bloody good season.
Maffey's hard, though.
He is hard.
He is a hard, hard man. Built for rugby. I can see that. Sean O'Brien would be the one that worries me.
Yeah.
And who's the fourth?
It's the two Aussie locks. They didn't get out for very much of the season.
Simmons and Coleman.
Have I got this right? Is one Aussie lock a lot younger than the other one?
So it's Coleman and Simmons.
I've got a feeling one just got loads of caps and the other one's
Coleman's
got three.
Like Simmons got 100 caps.
And Simmons must be probably 33, something like that.
They're locks. So, they can do that all day long.
Yeah, Coleman, 29, 34 caps. Simmons, I'm sure he's over 100 caps.
Yeah, Simmons got a huge...
105 run. Caps, 32.
32-year-old lock, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
That'll
no fit. Worries.
Steve Maffey is how old?
35.
Four.
He's only 31.
What?
Tough paper round for Maffey.
So when he was at Leicester, he must have been like 22 or
21
something.
He was at Leicester, yeah.
With his
21.
With his one glove.
Yeah.
So was Matera. He was at Leicester when he was about 21, wasn't he?
Yeah. Very young, yeah. Right after he sent a load of abusive tweets.
Oh, dear. Yes, I think they'll probably... If they get it together, they have got top four potential, I'd say. But more likely
no
top six.
No way.
No. No,
I'd love them to.
I'd love them to. That ground makes a difference. That ground is worth a few points.
Yeah, have you been to it?
Yeah, it's loud. And it's nice and steep. I really like
need?
It. It's like a steep AJ Bell. A Ooh. Steep, close, louder AJ Bell.
But it's not louder. It's close to the centre of Brentford, isn't it?
Yeah. It's right next to train line.
Yeah,
train
station. There's four pubs on. There was a pub on every corner of the old Brentford ground.
Yeah, exactly that. There's loads of pubs. There's a train station right there. Good day out.
So, if you were ticking off what you need to win the Premiership position wise, what do the London Irish have? Or top four? What do they need to get into top four? Fly half of a certain quality?
Yeah, you need a good fly half.
Done.
Yeah.
It's.
You need a good number eight.
Tuisui's not.
Tuisui is a good number eight.
He's a good number eight. They need to keep him fit. They don't have anyone below Tuisui.
Like, he's good. He's
how
not.
Many, how many
he...
better number eights? So, better number eights in the league.
Paledri, if fit.
Yeah, if it...
Sale have got two or three of them, I'd say.
Dan Dupree.
Dan Dupree, yes.
Is he...
Jean-Luc Dupree.
I think you swap Dan Dupree, certainly Jean-Luc Dupree, and Tuisui.
I mean, does Tom Curry count as an eight?
He does when he's playing for England. Steve Diamond said he could never play eight. He never even looked at him for eight. So
yeah. You've got
who knows more?
Visa,
so, Jasper Visa,
Jasper Visa,
Alex Dombrandt.
Yeah, Dombers. Yeah, Simmons. Yeah, Simmons all a very good. Different type of player. Talupe
Fowler-Tau
is quite
on
good.
Recent form.
No.
Billy's
all right, isn't
he's
he?
Sort of middling in the Prem.
Yeah, he's probably. Yeah.
He's not the absolute highest quality. He's very good, just not the highest.
He's very. Yeah.
And you know, got an electric back three. They've got locks. locks are important.
Oh, how could we not say Carl Ferns as well?
Carl Ferns. Because he played at six. Plays at six, Callum Chick plays at eight.
Yes, right.
My view is they've got the bare bones to sort of get there. You are right, they're not going to be top four, but I think they have got some of the material needed to get there.
Can they beat a top four team?
100%.
Yes, 100%. Definitely they can. Can they do it sufficiently to actually get themselves into the top four?
This is what they'll do. They'll beat a top four team, but they'll lose to Worcester. This is the sort of team that we're dealing with.
Yes.
I think at home they are going to be really tough to beat because, as I say, they're going to get a good crowd relative to what they have done in the past. Reading was a disaster. I mean, with the best will in the world, they tried to make the very best of it. And those St. Patrick's Day games were really good fun. And
The one in New York?
Oh yeah, that one. Absolutely, that one in New York. They used to get 20,000 people into the Medeski Stadium, but that Paddy's Day, block out that Paddy's Day weekend and go to London Irish because it will be awesome.
It will be cool. Should we do one more? Because we did say we're going to do, what was it?
No. So we've
got
only three.
Two when we get to the top three. Four, if that makes sense.
Three's good for today.
If we do three for today, then that gives us, I think it allows us to do the top two teams independently, so Bristol and Exeter on their own, but everyone else gets done in blocks of three.
They like Bristol being in the top two. They shouldn't be in the top two. It should be Quinns and Exeter in the top two.
Quinns won it from fourth. So yeah, maybe we should do Quinns and Exeter as the top two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Fair enough. Quinns have earned that.
Yes. Bristol Fair get enough. Moved down.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Any more for any more?
I could do with a little box set tip off.
I was going to talk about the Wasps.
Oh yeah, go on.
I don't think I want to. No. I think I want to leave it on this, and I'm going to hold my fire on that till another podcast where we can just unload on that. For safe to say, I'm not in favor of it, but I think we've touched too much politics today. So let's talk about box sets.
Okay, yeah. Let's not even bother explaining it because
the vast
majority of people who aren't on Twitter don't care and won't have seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's not entertain it. I need a box set. So. But I will say, I've only... Mindhunter, I've just...
Mindhunter?
I'm to watch it. It's really cool.
Interesting.
It needs a little bit of getting into, but I didn't realise there was a unit in the FBI who, in the 70s, started looking at... When serial killers became a thing.
Okay.
They started a behavioural science unit in the FBI to try and understand the motivations of serial killers, to try and understand the psychology of them so that they could try and predict where they might appear or stop repeat offenders when they were midway through doing the repeat offending. And it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. But I'm about to be short of a box set. I need a tip off. What have you watched?
I listened to a podcast the other day. Not that you asked this, but you're going to hear it. And it was it's sort of semi-linked to mental health, right? But one of the things it was going... So it just reminds me of what you were saying about the Mindhunters there. They were looking at the psychology of serial killers. And a lot of serial killers just basically copied each other. And then serial killing became a thing. And then, oh, I'll become a serial killer. Well, why not? Kind of thing. And it was saying like how, basically, once an idea gets into the national conscience, and particularly when medics push an idea, that it becomes more and more prevalent. So in a way, you know, the more you talk about serial killers, the more you don't get like more serial killer awareness. Like, I'm not reporting Phil as a potential serial killer, although to be fair, right,
he'd be very methodical.
Yeah,
if we were all serial killers, Phil would be the one that wouldn't get caught.
Well, it's always the guy you don't expect, isn't it? It's always that guy.
But he'd cover his tracks.
Yeah. So like the idea of like
he'd have all his he'd have all the people in cement in one of the buildings he's constructing.
He'd have their perfectly formed skins on his wall. Be wearing their skins at night. It's one of those things. I reckon the more serial killer awareness that we put out, we wouldn't just catch more serial killers. We'd just create more serial killers.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. I'm sure the same thing happens with terrorists. Like, just look out for terrorists, and all of a sudden, you get a load of terrorists. Anyway. So, box sets. I tell you what I did watch the other day, and I'm sure you will have watched it. Because, of course, I had COVID, I couldn't leave the house. I did the whole of season three of my favourite box set, which is... what's it? The very, very folksy one based in Minnesota.
Fargo. That season two of that is... probably the first two seasons of that are probably the best, some of the best telly I've ever watched.
I don't think they even need a storyline. They could just do random.
Yeah. Is that the season three? Is the Scottish fella?
I couldn't even tell you. I just loved watching it.
McGregor. Ewan McGregor.
Yes, it is, actually. It is. And it's really hard to work out who's
going
to be.
The one with Kirsten Dunst in it, the season two. Oh, that is just awesome.
Do you know why I liked it? I liked it because the bad guy wasn't who you were expecting it to be. So the very start is a guy in a posh house and his tux and all the rest of it. And it turns out he's the really nice guy.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, it happens. Season four is out now, so if you've not seen season three. And the other thing I started doing as well, not box set, but I started rewatching old sort of, not slapstick, like modern comedy things like, what was the one that I watched? The Other Guys. Love the Other Guys.
The first 10 minutes of The Other Guys.
The whole thing. Seldom has there been so many jokes packed into a film. There's not a single wasted scene.
I do like The Other Guys.
It's brilliant.
It is
Phil,
very good.
Anything? Any tip-offs?
Oh, no. Don't ask me. I'm spending my very limited TV time. So I'm still really enjoying watching through old Grand Designs.
Yeah, that sounds.
And I'm a bit of a loser, but yeah.
And I've started reading Rationality by Steven Pinker.
Interesting.
I'm enjoying so far. He's got an interesting brain, that man.
Yeah,
I'll let you know.
I've watched 280 something episodes of a man fixing a wooden boat on YouTube.
So nice. That's
are you make it? Have you got a YouTube channel to chart your boat building journey?
We do actually have an Instagram account, the Phyllis Mabel, run by my sister. So maybe look at that.
I might try and read a Steven Pinker book. I think I'd quite enjoy that.
I can't remember what it was called, but he did a TED talk which got a lot of attention, and it was a book off the back of it. And his point was, the world's never been so good.
Yeah.
Everyone's moaning and everyone's saying how dreadful. And I'm not talking about the last year and a half. I'm talking about the last 20 years. Everyone's saying how all these things are worse than they've ever been. Racism's worse than it's ever been. Wealth inequality's worse than it's ever been. Poverty's worse than it's ever, all this bollocks. And he just charts it out and gives you the facts and just says, we are the luckiest humans ever to have lived.
Right, just on the facts of things, right? TED Talks, would you ever do one? No, not a TED talk, not real, a TEDx talk.
TEDx talk? I don't know.
I would never do a TEDx talk in my life.
What is a TEDx talk?
So TEDx, right, what you see quite a lot of, specifically on LinkedIn, is like, I did my first TED talk. No, you didn't. You did a TEDx talk. So I could hold, as I understand it, a TEDx event, say, in Chorlton, and I could just invite you to speak. I think it's a little bit similar too. Have you ever seen when someone says, I've spoke at the University of Leeds Business School? Or I've spoke at Oxford University Business School. What they actually do is they hire out a room in an Oxford Business School. And then you pay me £100, then I will let you address all the other people that have paid £100 in the Oxford Business School, and then you go back and put on your thing, spoke at Oxford Business School.
Wow.
So TEDx is basically lots of people that want to talk, talking to other people that want to talk, and go, I've done a TED Talk, and they're almost all life coaches.
Do you get your video filmed and put on their website?
Not on the TED website, because it's not, it's like, I think it's like a licensing, I might be talking nonsense now, this is how I interpret it, like licensing spin-off for TED Talks, TEDx, so you can hold it in Preston.
What does the X stand for? What's the X?
Not exclusive. Anyone saying that they spoke in Leeds Business School or something like that, they've probably hired a room. And then you sell your tickets to £100 to anyone else who wants to speak there, and then you speak to other people who are already in that room. Boom. Spoke at Oxford Business School.
You going to do it?
Nice.
100%. You're mad not to.
on that Steven Pinker point, I'm reading a book called More From Less by Andrew McAfee, who was on Econ Talk a while ago. So he's a material scientist from MIT. And the overarching point is, not that everything is perfect, but he's basically making the argument that historically, human prosperity was directly linked to using more and more resources.
Yes, I've heard this. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And from the 70s in the developed world, that link has been taken away. So now, even though we are getting more and more prosperous, the link between consuming more and more energy, emitting more and more carbon, using more and more finite materials, the link has been broken. So now, even though we are getting more prosperous and populations are still growing, we are in the developed world using less energy, less material.
Less material, less steel. But not less energy, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, it's less, so less carbon emitting energy. So probably more energy in total, but less, more renewable energy and less fossil fuel.
On that, very briefly on that. Yeah. So I listened to something which was blowing my mind, where someone was this economist guy was explaining that GDP was.
Don't talk to me about GDP.
No, GDP is something that's invented and isn't,
of course it is.
Isn't real.
It's nuts.
Because much like energy, you've said energy. There is only there is a certain amount of it. You cannot grow more of it. You cannot take less away. You can only change the form of that energy from one thing to another, whether that's to a living human being or a carpet that my feet are on or whatever it is. And exactly the same. GDP was constructed because wealth you cannot grow. You cannot grow. You cannot take it away. It's actually ultimately.
No, you can.
Like no. Existentially, it's like energy.
No. It's not. It's not. You can. If I get a bunch of minerals and make it into an iPhone, that has created wealth.
You're adding value to the product.
I've created wealth.
No, but it's like energy. You're just changing the form of what already exists.
Because energy is finite. Wealth creation is not. I do disagree with that. But on GDP itself, it's crazy. Don't read about GDP. Don't study GDP. I've got a book. It's just called GDP. And you try and read the thing, and you're reading this thing. We're doing what? They will invent new ways to make GDP overnight simply so they can borrow more money.
That's how Greece got into the EU.
It's crazy. And the more you read it...
Because what they did for Greece is... we're getting way off. We'll stop in a minute. What they did for Greece to get into the EU is they lent them a load of money to be able to build infrastructure for the Olympics. And then said, you've got loads of infrastructure. We'll put that in your positive column, not in your debt column. We'll put that in your what you've got. And that inflated their books. So they went, you passed the test. You can come in the EU.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about GDP.
Anyway, we've got way off topic. Way off. Mind you, we started the podcast talking about football hooligans. So, we've sort of, at least we've raised the bar a little bit from there.
Exactly. Right, finish this off. Let's go.
Nice one.
Well done.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.